Synergy loves company.
With activations across our Synergy machine.
We have this coterie of rich franchises, the company now, that people want to engage with.
I came here to try and continue what Walt Disney and his associates set in motion 50 years ago, which is to experiment with every new and innovative kind of entertainment possible.
It's what they hope to do here, to really develop something that well, it's just more than an entertainment enterprise. It's something that contributes in many other ways.
So, hey, this is Synergy Loves Company, where we explore how Disney connects to everything. Keeping me company today is you. Thank you so much for listening. Usually when I have a guest on, I like to talk about Disney and something else. If you take a look at the last episode I did, it was the last one of 2022. I talked to Courtney and Emily from the Book of the Mouse Club all about banned books and Disney. Go back either after this one or pause this one, go back and listen to that one. And then come back to this one because it was a really fun conversation to have. I love to talk to other Disney creators because it gives me a chance to kind of hear their perspectives on different things about Disney, just all sorts of Disney things, theme parks, movies, in that case, movies based off of books that have been frequently banned and challenged. So it was a lot of fun. So Book of the Mouse Club, thanks so much for coming on my show last month. But today it's one of these solo episodes. An episode where it's just me and you listening. And on those episodes, I like to dive into the company. It's called Synergy Loves Company. So I'm going to take a look at the Walt Disney Company. And I started last solo episode last month, talking about Disney and the Hearst Company. And this one, this episode's a continuation of that. Last time we talked about A&E. This time we'll be talking about Lifetime Television, Lifetime Entertainment for Women, you might know it as. But this is part two in my How Disney Connects to Hearst series. I also want to tell you before we get started that later on, I have an exciting announcement that you'll get to hear about something cool that I'm starting for 2023 with Synergy Loves Company. So I hope you stick around to hear all about it. If you're watching this on YouTube, it'll be a separate video that you could go and jump into the feed and see. Just so you could jump right to it. All right. So let's get back into it. Let's talk about Disney and Hearst. So Lifetime and Disney is another part of this kind of relationship that Disney has with the Hearst Company. And I want to kind of get into talking about what Hearst has and what Disney has and kind of how they're related. And so last time I talked a little bit about A&E, and A&E was one of those companies that Hearst and Disney own 50-50. So Hearst, if you didn't know that much about Hearst, Hearst is a media company, much like Disney, without kind of the same following that Disney has, of course. They're probably most known for their newspapers, magazines, kind of print media, but they also got involved in television. And that's kind of where they got involved with Disney through ABC because they had some television affiliates in different markets that they kind of would buy ABC programming to put on their television stations. And they had that relationship going with ABC at the time when they started working with them. So when cable was coming out, if you go listen to the A&E episode that's in there, A&E was kind of a joint project between Hearst and Disney. In ABC at the time, it wasn't Disney yet, but A&E was a kind of a joint effort between Hearst and ABC to try to make some sort of cable channel, kind of have a footprint in the cable market so that they could kind of test the waters of, was this cable thing going to work? Really quick, that last episode about A&E was all about how A&E was acquired by Disney through the ABC and Cap Cities merger back in the 90s. And A&E was before that an early attempt to create like a PBS like fine arts channel. And over the years, it shifted to become reality TV station that it is today on cable. And one thing I noticed a lot in that A&E episode is A&E and Disney don't do that much together. So even though A&E is owned 50% by Disney, 50% by Hearst, sometimes we forget about it because they don't really do all that much together. Let's dive back into that same history because this is where Lifetime comes from too. So in that A&E episode, we talked about how Hearst and ABC made the Hearst and ABC video service, and they launched their first channel, which was going to be called the Alpha Repository Television Service. This was ARTS, A-R-T-S, and that's what eventually kind of became A&E. At the same time, they were going to release another station and call it Beta. So they're going to have Alpha Repository ARTS Television and Beta. And Beta was supposed to be kind of like a television station for women. It wasn't going to be on all day. It was only going to be on part of the day, during the day, only about 4 hours. And before it even launched, they changed the name to Daytime. It was just going to be called Daytime Television. So they went forward with Daytime in 1982, the same year that they launched ARTS. And they started with just that 4 hours a day. The 4 hours a day thing was kind of what a lot of different cable stations were like at the beginning. No one was filling a whole channel. Some channels were sharing time with each other. And Daytime was only on 4 hours a day, starting in about 1982. At the same time, we got to talk about Viacom. So Viacom, we think of as part of Paramount and CBS. Viacom back in the 80s too was trying to get into the cable market, and they came up with the Cable Health Network. Very, very original name there. So they came up with the Cable Health Network that would be like healthy living TV, some medical type stuff. And they put that out there also kind of a trying to see what would work in cable. The difference was this was a 24-hour cable network that had the medical programming on it. Now, it becomes important because in 1984, the two were both Daytime and Cable Health Network. Daytime was Hearst and ABC's venture, and the Cable Health Network, Viacom's venture, were both kind of floundering. So they merged the two. So they came up with Lifetime, but they kind of kept some of the branding, this little Apple Heart logo that Cable Health Network came over to the Lifetime logo. And now they had 24 hours of programming, but it included medical programming and this daytime kind of women's programming. So Lifetime got to keep it was Daytime plus Cable Health Network. We get Lifetime. Life with that, life is that like health part, and we took the time from Daytime, and there we go. A new company was formed to make this too. It was called HAVES, or Haves, Hearst ABC Viacom Entertainment Services. And that was the company in charge of Lifetime. As our time goes on, people were confused as to what Lifetime was. Some people were watching it for its medical television from the Cable Health Network. Some people were watching it for the daytime programming, which was kind of women's programming, but that kind of got muddied over time. It wasn't officially ever like announced that Daytime was women's programming, but that was definitely the target demographic. But when they polled people and said, what do you think this Lifetime station is? A lot of people thought it was religious for some reason. So there was a lot of kind of branding missteps. I think kind of rolling these companies into each other made it very confusing for people, and it had kind of an identity crisis. So 84, when they rolled it all in together, it still wasn't exactly what it should have been. It was still kind of a mess. In 1985, they understood that they had to rebrand. They had to change something about Lifetime and change what people thought of it. And one thing that had happened over time with the daytime part, the daytime branding and into Lifetime, is they had a lot of call-in shows. Shows where people who were at home watching could call in and hear their voice on the air. and ask their questions or tell what they were feeling, and the hosts then would talk to them live. So it's about this time in 1985 that Lifetime rebrands itself to talk television. And they had these call-in shows. One of them was really popular with Dr. Ruth. She's kind of one of those famous call-in show hosts. She had a show on Lifetime, so that was kind of a big name. And then, of course, Disney legend Regis Philbin has a show called Lifestyles with Regis that's on Lifetime. And that one is also a call-in show where you could call in and talk to Regis. I think this is too. 85 and probably a little later is about the time that we start seeing Regis pop up on those Walt Disney parades on Easter and on Christmas and all those fun, exciting things. So Disney legend Regis had his foot in the door early in Lifetime when it was still just under ABC and Viacom and Hearst. So 1985, it was kind of putting a Band-Aid on it. They noticed that they had a bunch of call-in shows. They're like, okay, this is cool and all, but why don't we put, you know, the talk TV banner on there? It wasn't really a fix. The real fix, the real rebranding, the first time that Lifetime gets seen as like, we're doing this, this is a good station, we're going to put some money behind it, we're going to put some ideas behind it, is in 1986 when they get a brand new head of programming, Patricia Philly Crucial, known as Patricia Philly at the time. She takes over programming for Lifetime, and she focuses more on the women's entertainment. She kind of leans back into that. She knows who she wants the target demographic to be and kind of goes after it. It's kind of weird because she knows that they're going for women viewers, but she doesn't necessarily change the whole like branding of, hey, we're going to call this television for women. That would come later, which I thought was kind of interesting. But Patricia Philly takes over and she gets more higher profile hit syndicated shows like Moonlighting. That's one of my jams there. I recently heard that Moonlighting actually, the crew that did Moonlighting also did the all the video and whatnot, the direction and filming of Body Wars. So that was kind of cool. But Moonlighting, they get the reruns of Moonlighting. They get some more exciting original programming during this time. They take over like a canceled show from NBC called The Days and Nights of Molly Dodd, and they produce three more seasons for that show, even though it was taken off the air on NBC, and kind of pull a bunch of viewers over with that. And then another show they kind of get started, they help get started at this period in the late 80s, is Supermarket Sweep. So Supermarket Sweep comes from Lifetime and is shown on Lifetime as well as PAX at the time. But we get that from this idea that Lifetime is going to support and purchase some new programming that can only be seen on Lifetime in addition to their syndicated shows. Another thing that they do is they look at those Haves companies, H-A-V-E-S, Hearst, ABC, and Viacom, and they start showing movies from Hearst, ABC, and Viacom. So these movies that have already been produced by these companies start airing on Lifetime, and that gives it kind of a little bit more like, oh, look at these are a little bit higher quality movies that I'm getting here, and I can watch them on my cable station, Lifetime. In 1990, under Patricia Philly, Lifetime produces its first original movie. Yes, those Lifetime movies, the ones, you know, the ones that we've been waiting to talk. You've probably been waiting. You're like, he's talking about Lifetime. We got to talk about Lifetime movies. And yes, we are going to talk about Lifetime movies. Let's talk about the first Lifetime movie ever. So the first Lifetime movie ever was called Memories of a Murder and came out in 1990. And I love the description of the plot for this one. A woman has an amnesia so bad that she forgets her family. So she has to piece her life back together. And in piecing her memory together, she discovers that she had a shadowy past. We've got layers here. So not only is she overcoming amnesia, she discovers that the person she was before she forgot who she was has a shadowy past. Not only that, someone is trying to kill her and her family. This is the kind of stuff that Lifetime movies. This is the kind of Lifetime movie stuff that we live for. The other thing is the star, Nancy Allen. She's received many bad acting awards for her performance in Memories of a Murder. And Lifetime produces this movie, puts it out there, and it kind of becomes the stamp of what a Lifetime movie is going to be. It has those thrilling elements, but it's a little cheesy. They're fun. I know there's so many Lifetime movies out there now. And I know I enjoy watching them for fun. Some of them are ripped right from the headlines. Some of them are concepts like this that are thrilling. Some are more lighthearted and different kind of feels like that. They even get into that Christmas movie thing like Hallmark. You could even say that probably the Hallmark movie wouldn't exist without these Lifetime movies. So I did want to highlight this first Lifetime movie and talk a little bit about what it was all about. So that was 1990. Patricia Philly is bringing Lifetime up. She's lifting the station up, making it something more marketable, more valuable to Hearst, ABC, and Viacom. And she sticks around until 1993. She actually leaves Lifetime to go over to ABC programming because they saw how good she was at turning Lifetime around, that they put her in at ABC because they're like, that's where the big money is. Let's put her there and have her program ABC and help us bring ABC up in the viewer charts and all those things. So in 1993, Douglas McCormick takes over the company, and he's the one who actually puts the Television for Women branding onto Lifetime. So he kind of puts that last piece of the puzzle in place. Patricia Philly got it all set up. She started making it successful, brought the right kind of programming in, and then Douglas McCormick puts that Television for Women piece in there to kind of define what it is. In doing that, though, he has to drop those medical television shows. We don't want the medical television shows out there because that's going to detract from the Television for Women. So this is when they finally shed that medical history that they started with. Cable Health Network kind of goes out. It's all about the Television for Women. It's that kind of programming that brought people there. This is also a time when they start showing women's sports like the WNBA after this rebrand, and they start making public service announcement geared towards their women viewers. And they do this to kind of go all in on the idea of television for women. It's not just, that's who we know our demographic is. They're saying no. In 1993, this is who we want our demographic to be. We want the Television for Women look here for our Lifetime station. So 2 years later, that's when Disney comes in. Of course, we've talked about this in the A&E episode. I'll probably talk about this so many more times because in 1995, it's kind of a big deal that ABC Cap Cities gets bought by the Walt Disney Company. This is where I've said before, this is where Bob Iger comes into the Disney company. This is where we can kind of point to this is a big accomplishment for the Eisner era. Even though it came late in that time when people were, people will say that he made a lot of mistakes starting in the mid to late 90s. This is where Disney comes into the Lifetime story. Right before Disney comes in, though, in 1994, Viacom gets out. They sell their stake. If you really think about it, 93, when the rebrand happens, Lifetime finally sheds that health kind of roots that they started with. That was the Viacom part to begin with. So Viacom is ready to leave. They leave in 1994, and it becomes all just ABC and Hearst, 50-50. And then in 1995, Disney buys ABC. So that ABC portion becomes Disney's 50% of Lifetime. It's at the time in 1995 when it comes into Disney's possession, Lifetime is very highly regarded as a cable channel. It ranks sixth in all of subscription channels on cable. And they found that they did hit that demographic they were looking for, but they also found that families and couples were watching the shows together. So it wasn't just exclusively women watching it. It becomes really popular, And it even proves its worth when there were some customers who complained that a cable provider, TCI, was threatening to pull Lifetime from about 1 million subscribers. They were actually going to replace it with this brand new Fox News station. But a bunch of listeners, right? Brand new Fox News. We know how that can be contentious and controversial today. But at the time when it was new, just after Disney had taken over Lifetime, it was going to get pulled. And so many viewers kind of wrote letters to TCI and were talking about how they were so upset about this. Lifetime actually gets to stay on TCI and doesn't get pulled. It had that much of a fan base who really got behind the channel and wanted to make sure that it stuck around. In 1997, around just after the Disney acquisition of ABC Cap Cities, Patricia Philly, who we knew moved over from Lifetime to ABC, became the president of ABC programming, and she helped create The View for ABC in 1997. So that becomes a really important show for ABC programming, and that was all started because of that kind of daytime to Lifetime experience of Patricia Philly, who kind of helps create that iconic ABC, call it like a magazine style roundtable talk show, going back to Lifetime's talk TV roots back in the 80s. And then we got to talk about what Disney sees. Disney, through ABC, sees Lifetime and the movies that they had been creating since 1990 being very successful. People are loving these Lifetime movies. Some people are setting their, you know, their VCRs so they could record them. People are, throughout the 90s, like sitting down to watch these things as they premiere, and they decide to launch another cable station with Lifetime, and that's the Lifetime Movie Network comes online in 1998. They want to show these Lifetime movies with limited commercial breaks so that people don't have to, you know, it's kind of like, let's replace that VCR recording with you coming to us to watch these movies kind of on rotation. Keep in mind, they could still throw in to the Lifetime Movie Network some of those ABC and Hearst movies that they had, those made-for-TV movies they could kind of bring over to Lifetime, repurpose them for Lifetime. And then Lifetime carries on this way through a long, really, into the 2000s, pretty strong. People know the name Lifetime Television for Women, that branding, and they know what to expect. They know the Lifetime movies, those become a big deal. And it continues on until 2009, when Hearst and Disney decide to take A&E and Lifetime and combine them. This is where it really merges with that story I told last time in the last solo episode, that A&E kind of becomes the flagship. This is the cable network that ABC and Hearst are going to put most of their networks under, their channels under, and to make things a little more consolidated, clean, and easy, they put Lifetime under there. So all of their 50-50 operations channels are all under the A&E networks. So Lifetime, even today, is still part of the A&E networks. And it keeps going on like that until 2017. 2017 is the year of synergy for Lifetime. In the A&E episode, I noted that A&E and Disney didn't really leverage A&E itself as something that they could synergize with, something that they could use to help promote other Disney entities, other Disney companies. It's just A&E becomes that place to park all of their cable stations that they own with Hearst. But one of those, Lifetime, is the one that they decide to use to kind of cross promote things, to use different properties, really to synergize with Disney. And there's two big ways in 2017 that Lifetime and Disney come together. The first one is beaches. So in 1988, Touchstone Pictures, Buena Vista Distribution, releases Beaches. This is one of those where we see Disney legend Bette Midler playing the character Cece and Barbara Hershey playing the character Hillary, who are friends who have a love triangle situation. And that iconic song, The Wind Beneath My Wings, Bette Midler sings it. It's one of those tearjerker kind of, you know, hug your friends, drama kind of, you get the feels kind of movie. Grab the tissue box because you're going to watch Beaches. Beaches, when you really think of it that way, it kind of fits the mold for what a Lifetime movie is becoming known for. Those movies that give you the feels when they're not like the thrilling ones that we talked about, like the first one, there are the ones that give you those feels. Grab the box of tissues. So Beaches comes out in the late 80s. That's right around the time, you know, you might even say this is the kind of movie that Lifetime was looking to kind of adapt into their movies, into the Lifetime original movies. And they do that with Beaches, but not until 2017. So to the 2017 Beaches takes the very successful 1988 story. It kind of waters it down a little bit, makes it shorter. It's not exactly what it was. It doesn't do as well, but excitingly, it adds Disney legend Idina Menzel into the Cece role and Nia Long as Hillary, and they have the same storyline, the same love triangle, the same friendship, the same or similar Wind Beneath My Wings. Ask someone who's seen them both, they probably will tell you it's not the same. That Bette Midler's performance in that movie, the 88 version, is superior. But Lifetime does go and give it the old made-for-TV try, because you can't blame them. It was right there. They were able to use a Disney Touchstone movie and bring it, update it for 2017. Now, this, there's a lot of parallels. We can look at this. We've got a Disney legend singing in the lead role. Although both of them weren't Disney legends at the time that they starred in these, that came later, of course, Bette Midler and Idina Menzel. But this shows one of those times that Disney does use Lifetime, or Lifetime uses its connection to Disney, I think we could probably say, in this situation, to get the rights to Beaches, to make that remake and leverage that relationship. A&E, we don't see this as much, but Lifetime, here we go, 2017. Now, there were two times in 2017 that this happened that I wanted to talk about. The first one we just talked about with Beaches. The second one is Descendants 2, the Descendants 2 premiere. Now, let me tell you, Descendants 2 is very near and dear to my heart. I can remember this. And I'll get into my story in a second. But before I do, the Descendants are still pretty popular today. I mean, 2017 was a little while ago, but it wasn't that long ago. And Descendants 2, the idea, if you didn't see Descendants 1, hopefully this isn't a spoiler, go back and watch all the Descendant movies after you're listening to this. They're all great, in my opinion. I love them. Descendants 2, though, the plot is that the villain kids are now good. Spoiler alert. And they bring more kids from the Isle of the Lost, where all the villain kids live, to Auradon. But Ursula's daughter, Uma, is really upset about this because she didn't get invited. And then she decides to attack everybody. Short story, or the long story short version there. When this comes out in 2017, it is a big deal. I remember it because it was a very big deal for my kids. One thing Disney Channel did to promote it is they had these tentacles on the screen every like 10 minutes when you were watching Disney Channel shows, just to tell you that Descendants 2 was coming. We were going to be on vacation at the time when Descendants 2 was premiering, so we made sure we found out what time it was going to be on, that we were going to be able to watch it wherever we were going to be at the time. We could drop everything and watch this Descendants 2 premiere. So when I looked it up, Descendants 2 was actually being simulcasted on Disney Channel, Freeform, and Lifetime, which was the first time Disney was using Lifetime, one of their Hearst and Disney cable properties, to do something like this, to show a purely Disney movie made for TV, movie made for Disney Channel movie, a Disney Channel original movie to be shown on Lifetime. So this was really cool. I remember we got to the, you know, you're on vacation, the TV, you don't know the channels, all that stuff. I was just kind of like, we could get in here. I could get Disney Channel, Lifetime, or Freeform. I got a better chance of getting one of these. We're going to see this Descendants 2 with limited commercial interruption. It was great. We found it. We watched it. We had the option to watch it on Disney Channel, Lifetime, or Freeform. And we were able to find it. And then we were able to watch it on a loop that entire weekend when it was showing. It was just kind of on constantly that whole weekend. Yes, it was on constantly in our lives whenever we were around the TV for that weekend, Descendants 2. And then even beyond that, because the kids like to watch it over and over and over again, as kids like to do. So 2017, the year of synergy with Disney and Lifetime. So Disney today still owns 50% of Lifetime with A&E as part of the A&E networks. Hearst still owns the other 50%. So we have one more Hearst property to talk about with Disney. And this is one that I know personally, I always think of as just a Disney thing. But no, Hearst still has a little piece of the puzzle. And that's ESPN. Disney still owns 80% of ESPN, but Hearst owns that 20% that Disney doesn't have. ESPN is probably a bigger episode than both A&E and Lifetime combined, because Disney is so, we think of it as such a Disney thing. ESPN was the first of the apps to put a plus on it, which you could say Disney was probably trying out the plus thing. ESPN Plus came out before Disney Plus came out, and now they're both part of the Disney bundle together. ESPN is so Disney in our minds, but we can't forget that Hearst still owns a tiny slice of it. So this one might not be one of the next episodes in my in the feed. You might have to subscribe and listen to some other ones that I put out before then, but you'll be able to find me talking about ESPN and Disney sometime in the future. That one I would definitely like to get some guest experts on to talk about with me. So stay tuned for some ESPN and Disney. But I want to talk one more thing today. I said I would have a special announcement towards the end, and so I'm not ready to go just yet. Maybe we wrapped up talking about Lifetime, but I'm not done talking about something exciting and new. And that is, I want to announce that I am starting to do some new things for 2023. And one of them, to celebrate the 100 years of Disney that we have this year, is my very own merch collection. Now, if you've wanted some way to support Synergy Loves Company, this is going to be a way that you can do that. Though I tried to make these designs for the merch be something a little more open to all Disney Company fans. Like they're not just Synergy Loves Company things. They're things for all Disney fans, especially fans of the Walt Disney Company. So the series I have is called Pop Synergy, The Classic Years. I know you might be thinking of a Disney hotel that has a similar name. And yes, I was inspired with Pop Synergy, The Classic Years by Pop Century Resort. This is like my home resort when we go to the parks. This is where we usually like to stay. We love the Skyliner. So I often think of the Pop Century Resort, and thinking of the 100 years of the Walt Disney Company, I can't help but think about how this resort was supposed to represent the entire century, the entire 100 years from the 1900s on to the 1990s. But of course, it only got in the second half, the classic years. Maybe there will be some legendary years coming from a merch line for me soon, but we'll have to wait and see. So Pop Synergy, I'm going to go through and talk about each of the designs and what I tried to do here, and then let you know where you can get your hands on this stuff. So it is a TeePublic set of designs. They're all available on TeePublic. And I started to think about the last half decade of the company. And really, when you think about it, it ended up being the Waltless years. So I decided to start in the 70s. And so what I did is I took each decade, much like we would in the Pop Century Hotel, I took each decade and I tried to create a style reminiscent of maybe a design or feel from that decade and kind of have a nod to something that was happening in the company at the time. So in the 70s, I have the shirt, What Would Walt Do? We kind of hear that when after Walt passed away, the company ran on autopilot. There's a cool 70s What Would Walt Do design to represent the 70s with the company. In the 80s, I took a riff on the iconic Frankie Says Relax shirt. Maybe you've got that in your mind right now. And I decided to make mine say Mikey Says Synergy with a little image of my pal Michael Eisner on there. And I couldn't help but put Synergy in it. Synergy Loves Company. And that's really when Eisner started synergizing the company as much as he possibly could. He's maybe the godfather of Synergy of the more recent Disney company. I know Walt had his Synergy too, but Michael Eisner made it his you know, battle cry, Synergy. So Mikey Says Synergy from the 80s in the style of Frankie Says Relax. In the 90s was tricky because in the Walt Disney Company, the 90s is the Disney decade, but it's also the beginning of the unraveling of the Eisner era. I decided to take a look at one of the most iconic things to organize yourself, and that is the Trapper Keeper. So I have a Trapper Keeper inspired design that, of course, this Trapper Keeper was probably just as popular in the 80s and the 90s and probably started to fall out of favor in the late 90s, much like Michael Eisner's strategic planning division. So this is my strategic planning Trapper Keeper Eisner era design for the 90s. It's pretty cool. Go take a look. In the 2000s, two things happen in the mid 2000s, and they actually happen in 2004, the same year. I got to double check that I got that correct. 2004, the same year, both we get the Save Disney campaign, the campaign that Roy E. Disney uses to oust Michael Eisner. And we get the movie Napoleon Dynamite, which is not a Disney property, but it becomes one when Disney buys 20th Century Fox. Later, actually, Bob Iger buys 21st Century Fox, as we could call it now, 21st Century. And that is I got a Napoleon Dynamite style vote for Iger shirt, kind of like the vote for Pedro one, because that's when the company was trying to push out Eisner and bring in Iger. So there's my 2000s tribute design. In 2010, Iger starts, or the 2010s, I should say. And really, this probably goes back to when Iger takes over in the mid-2000s too. But Iger's style was all about adding more to the company. And it reminded me of those ampersand shirts that started to become very widely popular at the time. And so I have one that says Iger and Oswald and Shanghai in acquisitions and streaming plus, because those were all the things that he started to add to the company in that iconic style that became really famous around that 2010s time. And then last but not least, we have to talk about the 2020s. I know the 2020s just got started. We're just beginning the 2020s. But we had a CEO for a very short time in the 2020s who gave us so much material to work with. So we have the Activate the Synergy Machine shirt. There's a tons of little Easter eggs on here to those 999 days that we had the CEO, Bob Chapek, and all of what he did for or to the company. So those are my decade shirts. It's going to be really cool. If you're listening to this, all of those shirts that I made are you can see them on the YouTube video from the stream, or you'll sneak a peek at my Twitter and my Instagram over the next few days, and you'll start to see these designs pop up one after another with, you know, links to go find them. Because if you're listening, you can't see them. You just heard me talking about them. I also couldn't help myself. I made one more shirt. This one is my logo for Synergy Loves Company, but in kind of a 90s remix way with shapes, cool shapes. Maybe a little Memphis-y looking, maybe a little Wonders of Life looking, but it's there, and you could represent Synergy Loves Company with this one in kind of a cool 90s style. So like I said, I'll put a link in the description, the show notes, where you can see these shirts, where you can order them, find them on TeePublic. You could find them on synergylovescompany.com, my website. There will be a link to the shop. You could find them through my social media, of course. And then I'll have to keep thinking about what I should do later this year for the legendary years. Maybe I'll just make some art of animation type thing instead. Just kidding. That's what happened, though, of course, to the Legendary Years Hotel in the Pop Century area. So we'll see if my Legendary Years project ever gets off the ground. Who knows? We'll just have to wait and see. Make sure, though, that if you do want to wait and see, you are subscribed or following me on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. You can find me on Twitter at Eric H. Synergy. Find me on Instagram at Synergy Loves Company or Facebook.com/Synergy Loves Company. And of course, you could find me on SynergyLovesCompany.com. You'll also find ways to get to all those socials or the podcast from there. Other than that, if you're enjoying what you're hearing, or if you know someone who would enjoy what you're hearing, please, please, please let them know about the show. If you got friends who, like in the past, we've done episodes about Disney and different aspects of the company or different aspects outside of the company. And if you know someone who would enjoy that topic, send it their way. Let them know what we're doing here on the show. I would really appreciate that. That's how we really get the word out there. And that's kind of the most important thing for me, is that if you're enjoying it, you tell some other people that you are enjoying it. Thank you so much for stopping by. Remember, if it is a solo episode, I do record those live in front of a virtual audience, you could say. And then, of course, if you're there, it's always, you know, cool if you stick around and chat with me at the end, and we can communicate that way. I will see you next time on Synergy Loves the Company.